Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our second show today on November 18th, 2020. My name's Larry Jacobs, and this is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Hope everybody's being safe out there with the pandemic, et cetera, and I hope you're getting ready to have a good Thanksgiving next week. Okay, this is a show we're going to have. I can't thank my friends over at CCSSO, the Council of Chief State School Officers, enough. We've got Dr. Matthew Bloomstedt, who is the Commissioner of Education in Nebraska, good old Nebraska. Okay, great little place, I got to tell you, not so little. Okay, and he's also just recently assumed the role of President of the Board of Directors for the Council of Chief State School Officers. So he's going to give us both his national view and also what's happening in Nebraska in terms of education, all the wonderful things that are going on, as well as dealing with the pandemic. It's an interesting time to be a state commissioner, and we're going to have a nice conversation with Dr. Bloomstedt. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. That is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Equity is the big deal everywhere. We hope we're the epicenter of it. The American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Our magazine is over there, our official journal, the online journal Equity and Access, which is excellent. Up there today is probably the last day that our September-October issue will be featured. Our November-December will probably go up today or tomorrow, okay? So you can see both of them over the next few days. Of course, we keep every issue up there under archive shows. But Equity and Access is a wonderful, wonderful magazine. We're very proud of it. Great advertisers, great editorial. You'll really enjoy it if you take a minute to go over there, and you'll see the icon for all our podcasts as well. We want you to join our consortium. If you're an educator, it's free to all educators, pre-K-12. Again, ace-ed.org, and we tweet it at You Talk Radio at Access to Equity ED. That's Access, the number two, Equity ED. Facebook is my name, Larry Jacobs, and also Education Talk Radio, and LinkedIn is my name, Larry Jacobs, as well. And that's now Dr. Bloomstedt knows my name is Larry Jacobs. Good morning, Dr. Bloomstedt. How are you?
Hi, Larry. It's good to be with you. And please call me Matt.
Thank you, Matt. I will do that. I always like to go. You are the ultimate Nebraskan. You have your doctorate from University of Nebraska, Lincoln. So I was going to go with the doctor.
Well, you know, I joke with folks that I got a degree from a Big 8 university, a Big 12 university, and a Big 10 university, as all three came from University of Nebraska, Lincoln. So it sounds better, though, with big conferences. So.
Good line. Good line. I love it. And so anyway, I hope you're staying safe with all the COVID out there, et cetera. Okay. And I don't do a lot with Nebraska, so I'm thrilled that you're here today, you know, and it's such a great state. I'll be honest, with such great people. Okay. Every Nebraskan I've ever met, and you're going to be included in that, has been an absolutely wonderful person. How long have you been a commissioner of education there?
So it's almost 7 years. So it'll be 7 years
Wow.
in January officially. So, yeah, so a long time in this realm of work, I think. So,
wow, it's great. And what were you doing before that?
So I actually worked with our educational service unit statewide for 5 years. And those are intermediate agencies like a lot
of
states have.
ESA,
absolutely. So really good there. I worked out of our state capitol for our education committee chair. I was the policy analyst for the education committee, and before that I was the director of our Nebraska Rural Community Schools Association. So I kind of say I'm really the commissioner of education today due to poor career planning. I just love education.
That's
I love
funny.
Education policy.
They're lucky to have you, believe me. And I'll tell you, you must know my friend. I don't know if you do know Joan Wade. Did you know Joan from AESA? She's the executive director.
Yeah. So in fact, really happy. We work a lot with our local affiliates that have those national affiliates. And so I know that our Council of School Administrators works with them really close as well.
Great. Super. They're wonderful people. Joan's a close friend of mine. I love ESAs. And I do a lot of shows with them because, to me, they're this great hidden thing in education. They do so much, okay, for so many kids. And it's just great. And you could probably go on and on about that. Why don't you let's start off. The pandemic's going on. We're going to talk about that. But you've just taken on kind of a national position, All right. And as I like to say, in your spare time from being Commissioner of Education in Nebraska during a pandemic, okay, you're now President of the Board of Directors for the Council of Chief State School Officers, right? Congratulations, by the way.
Well, thank you. And kind of goes in the theme of poor career planning. But the reality is I'm very honored to be in this particular role and provide some kind of national leadership. And one thing that I've learned across the country is, you know, really try to listen to my peers and understand what their needs are in this moment and kind of organize the great leadership we have across the country and states and really have a strong voice that's not as this polarized voice that you hear so often in a national sense, but really a unified voice about where we need to go with education.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Everybody can talk about red states, blue states, whatever. But as I talk to commissioners of education, whether they're Republican or Democrat, which, by the way, rarely even comes up, okay, whether they're elected or appointed, okay, what seems to matter that there's no – I don't hear the politics of polarization, all right, within the education community. All right. Maybe it's out there, but in the leadership, and maybe you want to comment on this. Okay. To me, the goal is simply making sure every kid gets the education they deserve. I think that's the bottom line for everybody. I'm always impressed with that. Have you noticed any polarization or anything? I haven't.
No, I mean, here's what I see most is that we're having to respond to kind of what I'll say, you know, politics at a local level, you know, certainly.
Yeah, well.
It impacts us just like it impacts everyone else. But where you find that, you know, I think unity around education is folks really want a high quality experience for their students in all forms of education. And what I see with my colleagues is just deep, thoughtful vision for where their states go, a real desire to work, you know, in a structured, you know, productive way with the national partnerships that we have and including even with the Department of Ed. And so, you know, trying to find that balance is tougher and tougher, but I'm going to tell you really, really just great people that are my peers across the country and their staff.
They are.
I mean, as great as all of my peers are, I'll bet their staff is even all the better, right, all across the country. There's some really dedicated people in our state education agencies.
There really and truly are, and you're going to bring some good Nebraska common sense in there as well as you take over the presidency. Let me ask you about Nebraska first, and I know you've got some great initiatives there, et cetera. All right, you can talk about those, but what's going on with COVID, all right, in Nebraska? I didn't even know, is there a spike there now? There seems to be a spike nationally.
Yeah, it's not looking very good in Nebraska right now. I mean, we're kind of in the top five. You have the Dakotas and Nebraska. In Iowa.
I know Dakota.
It's very high. We're very concerned about where hospital capacities are. And we're also very concerned about what happens for schools. I mean, for the most part, most of our schools opened with students. We had some that were working in hybrid. We had our largest district, Omaha Public Schools, had started the school year full remote and then came back to a kind of a hybrid environment. But across the state, our smallest communities, for the most part, we're trying to operate. We didn't see widespread in some of our rural communities, but we're seeing that now. It's a real concern for schools and a real concern for teachers. By the way, teachers, I just got to give a quick word.
Yeah.
Teachers are amazing. I tweeted out at the beginning of the year, the semester, and I said the top five things that are going to make this year a success. And I said, number one is teachers. Number two is teachers. Number three is teachers. Number four is teachers.
Great.
Right. I mean, it's the reality. Teachers are critical, and we've seen that in Nebraska too, that just finding that balance for everyone right now is important. You know, one thing I'll add, I mean, obviously we started in the spring, it hit in Nebraska. Our first case was on March 6th. By March 13th, I was You know, we had already organized statewide calls by that weekend. In fact, I started a statewide call with all of the state leaders, public and private school leaders, and did that. Started on every Sunday, eventually moved it to every Monday. I think we're on Tuesdays now, but and maybe every other week now. But involved our governor. I'm not appointed by our governor. I'm selected by a separately elected state board of education as a separate entity.
Clarify.
So it's a different model. Most states have a lot more connection to their governor's office. I have a connection. We have a good working relationship. We try to manage all those things. We don't necessarily always have to agree on everything, but we're trying to manage in an environment to, number one, keep schools as what I want to say as open as possible right now, and serve our students and families as best we can, and at the same moment in time, keep a level of energy for the work that we yet have ahead.
Are you? I don't know if there's a concern out there. I don't know enough about Nebraska right now, but masks have become a political ball back and forth, a political tennis ball. The idea of putting a mask on your face. What are the rules for schools out there? Do kids have to be masked? Do teachers have to be masked? And has there been any blowback on that? I haven't heard of anything, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, there definitely has. So our governor in Nebraska has chosen not to go down the path of a statewide mandate, at least at this point in time, for masking, created controversy. And we have local public health officials, again, great people that have been working really close with us. We've asked our schools, and our schools have to really understand that masking is the thing that keeps them in session and keeps students in schools.
Right.
We came up with an approach to quarantine that that folks could understand and created some good models for that. We've asked our schools, we basically said, hey, look, we kind of had a color-coded approach to risk at a given level, and most of our schools right now across the state are probably, you know, orange or red as far as that risk level, and masks are, school districts can manage, can mandate masks, and we've had quite a few that do that. Yeah, they can. They're not prohibited from doing that, and we've encouraged that to keep the doors open. We have some schools that have resisted that, to be honest. The communities that they come from want to resist that, and we're trying to balance it. Yeah, you know, I like to say mandates are sometimes for the willing, right?
There's no mandate police out there to police the thing and make everybody crazy.
Exactly. That's a challenge. So we have some pushback on occasion, but we're launching a campaign actually tomorrow that is a statewide campaign that's supported both by the governor, myself, business leaders, nonprofits that, you know, are really trying to get the community at large to understand masking. We don't see much spread in schools. You're seeing that nationally, right?
Our protocols are
actually working. But where we see spread is in the communities, more in social settings. We gotta be able to kind of ratchet that down. Otherwise, we're going to have a very, very tough winter time ahead of us.
Yeah, it is going to be rough. And my argument with that always is that the 99% of the people who don't want to wear masks, if you fell down in front of them, they would stop and help you up. Okay, and there's a mix-up between people who think a mask is helping them. It's not. You're wearing a mask to help the next guy. Okay, it has nothing. You're just doing it to help others, and most people want to help others. And somehow that message got lost. All right, so I wish you good luck with that. I hope everybody stays safe. You know, it's just that simple. It's really scary. It's scary times. Anecdotally, okay, how is Nebraska doing right now? And I know you've had initiatives running and all that. A lot of things got put on halt, okay, as we've moved. How do you feel things are going right now with education this year? Are we doing okay with all this in Nebraska? Yeah.
Yeah, I think across Nebraska, I think in particular, I mean, we started the year, and of course, people worked extremely hard during the summer to set out protocols.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone wanted to be back in school as much as possible, certainly. And so we laid out and did a lot of work around protocols. The focus became everything around around the health scene. And I've now asked our school leaders and different groups to start working on, okay, what do we make our educational improvements? We know it's not perfect for everyone. It's a challenge. We want to make sure that we're addressing the needs of our students with disabilities. We want to make sure that we're addressing any of the students with IEPs, any special needs. And that was a real challenge in the shutdown. That wasn't, you know, just Nebraska, but across the country. And we also wanted that our students that are that are coming from homes where their families are doing without income or otherwise really struggling in the pandemic, we had to find ways to them. So I think we've done a lot of that. We have schools running. I think everyone pretty universally across Nebraska believes, schools are the best place for students to be. But also understanding there's a role for education in managing the pandemic. Later this week, I hope to kind of share some thoughts, some Thanksgiving thoughts, I guess, with schools across the state. But I want to have them, have a little grace for themselves. I think teachers work so hard, put a lot of stress on themselves, going, I can't get everything done that I thought I was going to get done.
Yeah.
I'm not sure pacing guides right now are exactly where we need to be. We need to kind of mostly be able to focus on the health and well-being and the mental health of our students and families. So keeping some of that in place, but we also know that we're going to have to measure where the learning losses took place. And, no surprise, this to me, and Nebraska won't be any different than the rest of the nation. We think this is a gap widening experience, not a gap narrowing experience, right, for the for students. And so how are we going to respond to that? We're going to have to come out of this with some responses. I started the year with as normal, but in a virtual environment, giving a speech about disruption and innovation in these moments and how we move kind of this from discord to discourse about the future of education. And we continue to do that. I've asked our schools to be thoughtful about, number one, how we continue to provide a response in this setting, but also how we grow out of it. So we're looking for innovation everywhere, encouraging innovations. I have, people don't believe it. Educators are really, kind of by rule folks for the most part. They go, hey, look, what's the rule? And say, well, I'm going to take the rules off or as much as I can so you can both be safe and also engage your students in the best way.
And it's, you'll see the teachers are going to be so creative, et cetera. It's all going to work out. I must ask it. I live in Maine. I'm talking to you from Maine, which once you get out of the area where I live, it's pretty darn rural. Okay, which is not that much different in that regard from Nebraska. Okay, what's the word on? And this was the challenge in March. The word with the broadband access. Kids all of a sudden went remote. And today, a lot of kids are still remote. And it's, again, a rural state. How are we doing with broadband if the kids are stuck at home or anything? What's going on with that? Yeah.
Some of the short-term kind of fixes for that, we were sending kids home with, one of MiFis or hotspots, whatever they might be called. A lot of schools were doing that. I think we still have areas of the state that we've got creative about, kind of new technologies and how to get them broadband to their home. But we certainly have areas that it's nearly impossible. So I will say a good example of me partnering up with our governor, we actually laid out and used a lot of the CARES Act funding to ensure access to broadband and looked at infrastructure needs and looked at, scaling up some of those deliveries, but there's a national policy issue involved in this. I've been a champion for quite a while of expanding broadband to homes as part of the school environment, looking at E-rate differently I actually believe that broadband to the home should be treated more like a universal service. And we have some challenges. I grew up in rural Nebraska myself where, rural electrification. My dad worked as a lineman and actually delivered the first electric mini farm.
Wow.
So the reality, I think, for us as a country, Maine included in this dynamic of we probably still have areas that need to be served and we're going to have to get more creative. But there are new technologies coming along. In the short term, I think we did a really good job of looking for strategies. There were business sponsors and companies that came to play and offered, kind of discounted abilities or discounted rates for schools to be able to participate in that. So again, a lot of good a lot of good, I think, progress on it, but you can't always solve those things in the middle of a crisis. But I think we're going to come out of that with better ideas about how to fix it in the long run, which will be critical for us.
It is. And, you know, you bring up the good point that as horrible as this pandemic is, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. Okay. But it's going to be an opportunity. It was an opportunity from day one to all of a sudden open our eyes and see where the problems were. Okay. And from when you can confront the problems, you can start to correct them. And I think in the long run, education is going to change to some degree. And I think we're going to take advantage of knowing things that we didn't know before, and things are going to be better in the long run. And I must ask, as president of CCSSO, okay, is, and you know, we tend to forget you guys and gals have to concentrate, okay, on educating kids, and then you've got the pandemic aggravation on top of it. We thought everything was going smooth. Nationally, what are the priorities, do you think, of CCSSO for 2021? 1921? I'm normal. Yeah.
The reality, I think, for us, and of course, I think a lot of lessons that, again, as I've listened to my colleagues around the country, we definitely find some themes that I think will become major priorities for us in the response and recovery. And, you know, number one, how do you open schools and keep them open in a safe environment? We probably need better, you know, better testing in a pandemic, better connections to local public health and how that data is shared. I mean, that's certainly a need for us of managing that in the pandemic. And so I think we can't come out of this moment without a better system to address those issues in the long run. And we have some short-term needs that I think we need to advocate for. And as we look, you know, look to a transition at the national level, these are going to be major themes for us. I think the other part is, you know, broadband is actually one of the big ones that I would say, is that thinking through those access points. And in addition to broadband, also kind of digital resources and how we can scale some of that up. You know, I at least in a state like Nebraska or like Maine where you're at, it's hard to be able to scale that up on your own. So how do we think about some strategies that scale up digital resources in a different way? And professional learning resources as well. So teachers need additional supports and different things. So, you know, I would really be an advocate of working with existing national partners like PBS that has done great things over the years and finding some ways that we could do that. So that, you know, so in addition to the broadband, I guess other digital resources kind of coming into that. You know, the social emotional needs of our students and families and even teachers at this moment in time is an imperative for us to figure out how we ensure that those resources are there, ensure that we're able to transition the energy, the proper energy to help folks that are going to struggle through this. And we've long had this. I mean, I will tell you, if it had not been for the pandemic, my focus point would have been on our systems involved youth across the country, those students that end up in foster care or in other settings, including juvenile justice settings. And those are our most vulnerable, and they're also suffering in these moments. And so we need to create much more of a kind of an educational safety net for kids that might be in those very things as well. So that would, and again, I think we can do some of that in this pandemic. And then I would also say really how we got to take another look at how we fund special ed across the country. When IDEA was passed, there was a real desire to fund that at a pretty high level from the federal front. I think 40% is what they anticipated, and we're down probably around 12. We need to find that balance. And again, I'm not saying it has to go all the way there, but we got to find that balance on how we would better use funds, how we would also better support the expectations for special ed. I mean, I think our students just and families in this moment, we truly weren't pandemic proof. So that's a really important part. And then I'd say last, that we really got to rethink where we're at on assessment and accountability for the long haul as a country. I don't believe that the traditional assessment has delivered the results that we all wanted. I do believe in continuing to measure that and measuring from an equity perspective. We can't continue to of gaps and do nothing about them.
I
tell my team quite often, I really grow tired of admiring the problem. So it's time we think differently as a country.
It is.
About
that's one of the good things that's going to come out of this pandemic is we were forced to confront the issue as opposed to thinking about it all the time. That's key.
Yeah, and it's really key. And I think, and this may be what we can do through CCSSO and with this kind of leadership, it's not a partisan issue, right? It's actually about understanding what we want to push collectively, understand how we organize the resources and move together with that. We can't be in a finger-pointing dynamic between states and the federal government or states and the local schools. I really believe in collective accountability. And
that's right. You're here.
And Larry, I think I was on your show maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I don't even remember when, maybe even longer than that.
Really?
Talking about what we're doing about our accountability system. And we've stuck with it. You know, I've been on that for – well, when I started 7 years ago, I think we had the accountability system start to be designed. We call it AQUEST in Nebraska, so it's Accountability for a Quality Education System Today and Tomorrow. What we've tried to do is say that there's a much more holistic view of this. And on a flip side, I really want to focus on, that students are really ready for their success. I want our students to go through our system and then hold us accountable too, right? So,
exactly.
So, it's, to me, I think we could be in a, you know, I'm probably, I don't want to be Pollyannish, but I think we can,
no,
we can actually make huge differences through education.
We can.
And with,
we can.
We've kind of suffered from education being the, you know, like, all, it feels like, and teachers tell me all the time, it just feels like people are pointing fingers at them. And it's like, they're the heroes in this moment. And we
got
to
right.
find a way to support that natural
right.
energy towards improvement.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, I had to know that you were on the show a few years ago, and I meant to welcome you back at the beginning, and I just oversaw my note. So thank you for reminding me of that, Matt. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I can't
that.
Remember exactly when it was. So, you know,
yeah, it was a couple of years ago. Yeah, so thank you. I had a note, and then I didn't see it when I started the show. And did you mention PBS? Did you say PBS?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
just so you know this, and I can help you with that a little bit if you're serious. That's who my wife works for, PBS Learning Media. She's a senior manager over there. Not to push her job, but if you'd
you
like to talk to her,
Maine,
I'd happy to connect you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. Maine and Nebraska, I always call it 2 degrees of separation, right? It's not not too hard to make these connections. So, no, it's great. I'm actually, as part of my Nebraska role, I'm on the board of directors for our Nebraska Educational Telecommunications, which includes PBS station and the public radio as well. So it's,
well, I'm happy to introduce you to Carolyn if you'd like to talk to her, because there are some great resources there. And they are they're yours for the taking, if you want.
All right.
Okay. Not to push her, but on you. But if you want it, it's there. Okay. You know,
just
it's good
email.
Stuff.
Let's do the connection by email.
I will make the connection. I promise you. Her name's Carolyn. And you know, you brought up something else that is very interesting these days, and that's social justice. Okay, that was kind of that whole net. We have to be responsible to that. And a lot of people would think right off the bat, oh, Nebraska's so rural, why are we even considering that? But I remember there was a problem in the spring, I believe, in Omaha. Wasn't there?
Yes.
So there was some gentleman was hurt by the police. I don't know the details anymore. I knew it back then.
Actually,
okay.
We had a young African American man killed at the time after the George Floyd riots. He was killed
that's
by
right.
someone who owned a bar. The bar owner later ended up.
The bar owner. That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
He ended up later being charged and then committing suicide. I mean, so the whole thing, it's just, this is just beyond comprehension. I would have never imagined. I thought that, those moments were relegated to history and black and white
or the movies. Or the movies, yeah.
Yeah, and I am just going to tell you, those things happened. We saw young people, and I would say proudly in my view, that were peacefully protesting, and then the challenges that we saw, I also in those moments I saw in Lincoln, right outside the Capitol steps in Nebraska, were a group of young students just from a school not very far away and imploring the police that were, you know, they're trying to do their jobs too, but imploring them to kneel in remembrance of George Floyd. And they pulled that off. And I think it was the first scene I'd seen of that anywhere in the country. And I,
wow.
It brought me to tears, because the reality is this is real for Nebraska as well. You know, I can tell you that I've used for years, because I'm kind of a history buff, I guess, but, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. came and spoke in Lincoln, Nebraska, you know, on December 30th, 1964, you know, right after the Civil Rights Act, and actually before the spring 65 when they passed the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And he spoke words that I think were so powerful. You know, and I've got a little audio clip of it that I'll share with you sometime, Larry. So we're part of that history. Nebraska is right in the middle of the country. If you look at the history of race relations in the country and even statehood, when Nebraska became a state, it was in the midst.
Kansas,
you know, right after the Civil War, Kansas-Nebraska Act, right? So,
yep.
So there's a lot of times, and I'm going to say I probably grew up thinking those things happened far away, as I learned in our schools, and as I learned growing up, the reality is we're right in the middle of it. And I've asked Nebraska to lead from the middle instead of being, you know, kind of stuck in the polarized world, right? We have to think about what's right for our students.
You're the perfect state to do that, because you literally are in the middle. You are in the middle.
We are in the middle. I guess our other claim to fame is that we're three times landlocked, and we're the only state in the nation that can claim that. So we're far from an ocean or a beach too. So.
Well, Maine has the honor of being the only state in the contiguous 48 that is only bordered by one other state.
And
there you go. We are only bordered by New Hampshire.
Yeah. Hey, you know, as you say that, I got to give a quick shout out to the CCSSO board members, which are, you know, I'm going to say coast to coast to me, because, you know, my colleagues that are on that board with me are so important. And, you know, we do elections every year, and new folks are on, but following me will be President-elect Molly Spearman from South Carolina, and just
she's
joining
wonderful.
The board on. Yeah, she's great. And then James Lane from Virginia, who is a great leader in Virginia. Katie Anthus from Colorado has just joined the board. Kirsten Baszler from North Dakota.
Jillian Baylow. Kirsten's great.
Yeah,
I know her well.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, and Jillian Baylow from Wyoming, who, just the past president. And so she had the great honor of being president of CCSSO and never running a meeting in person. And I told her, I might be the second. You'll be first, but I might be second. And then Sid Dixon from Utah. Sid's just a great leader in
Utah.
That's
female Sid Dixon, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, female. Sydney
female
Dixon,
Sid.
Exactly.
Yeah, Sydney,
She's a great,
she's wonderful
great friend
too.
And a great thinker. And Christina Kishimoto from Hawaii, who's also just super thoughtful, and then Michael Johnson from Alaska. I hope I didn't miss anyone. I'm doing that off the top of my head, so I hope I got.
Well, you did pretty good. I got to tell you, if you missed any, they'll understand, because you got a good group there. You're going to work with a great group of people, and I only hope that this damn pandemic ends and you'll be able to have a martini and clean glasses together sometime in 2021.
Yeah.
That would be the good thing. Yeah, I wanted to ask you one other thing, and this is a concern, and I think it's going to be more of a concern. And I don't know what it is in Nebraska, but just generically, the teacher pipeline, that is not good, okay? And, yeah, we have elementary seems to be the winner right now, okay? But we still need great elementary teachers, but secondary is really tough, particularly science and math and special ed, which you mentioned. What's going on with that? How does that fit in as a priority at all? Because what do we do without
really
teachers?
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because there is a real concern coming out of the pandemic that, you know, that the teacher shortage that we are already anticipating will be exacerbated by this moment. So what I also want to be able to highlight is the kind of heroic work that does take place. And I think the types of things in the profession that make it exciting are the types of things that we'll have to be doing in the future, right? The chance to develop teachers maybe in different ways. I'm looking at things in Nebraska that would actually possibly educate teachers in a, instead of going to 4 years of college and then doing your student teaching, that maybe we'd look at more of a, some people might call it a medical model or residency model approach, but I'd like to get students taking part of their coursework while they're in classrooms working, and including maybe paying them part of that process. So we're experiencing that right now. We have obviously just a shortage due to the quarantines that might take place and other things around the state, but I think we're actually introducing a lot of people to the possibilities of the teaching profession today in Nebraska. We've also allowed different permit processes, which traditionally might have been a concern for our teachers association and whatnot. But we work closely with our Nebraska State Education Association to really manage in this pandemic time frame and try to put ourselves in a position where we're working with them to think differently about how we bring people into the profession. They're very grateful for that. We've had something we call career education permits that maybe would take somebody in a science field or construction field or whatever it may be and be able to help them come into that. And we found, in fact, our teacher of the year that she's just wrapping up her term actually came from outside of the teaching profession, worked in a different setting, and then came to teaching after that, and it's just an amazing teacher, and I didn't know it at the time that we gave her that award that we surprised her that her mom was a former teacher of the year too. So it's
really
so it's just we've got story after story of how great the teaching profession is, and I think the things that have burdened teachers the most, I mean both the challenges of how we've managed accountability and assessment and not held that accountability at a more broad level. It shouldn't fall on the same way. And at the same point in time, really engaging them for the innovations in education. And I once wrote an article about how something about, kind of a building the better mousetrap type of approach that, if you just train the mice to go to the traps, it'd be all the better, but that it doesn't work that way, right? The reality, I think, for us is I tell teachers, and I think back and reflect on all the teachers I ever had, and people can do this, and each one was remarkable in their way, and the reality is kids really deserve that great of a teacher in their classroom, and we got to create some ways that number one supports those teachers and helps them come into the profession.
That's right, because it is a good profession. It used to be the starting profession of so many people. Okay, especially first gen students, they would go become teachers. All right,
yeah.
And they may get into something else later, but they were teachers for a while. I'm a classic example of that. Okay, I was a teacher for 10 years, then went into other things, but I taught for 10 years. Okay,
yeah.
And it's a whole thing, and Nebraska. All I can say is Nebraska is a good place, and you're gonna be a terrific leader at the board of directors for CCSSO. I hope they know how lucky they are, Matt.
Usually people get over that with me after.
Yeah, I don't believe that. And also, don't forget, you now have the private jet, CCSSO1. Did they tell you about that? Did they mention that to you?
I have missed that along the way, so I'm
write a letter immediately. Mention my name, okay? the jet is waiting. It's wonderful. They're free almonds the whole way. It's unbelievable. Chocolate covered almonds. It's unbelievable. You're doing a great job out there.
I did thank the CCSS crew. We just did our annual policy form as we do, and of course we did it remotely. And I thank the crew for the great accommodations, the open bar and open fridge.
Right, it's good. We'll go have a Nebraska steak, okay? I bet that sounds good to me right now. Okay, take care, Matt. Be safe. Above everything else, please be safe. Keep those kids safe and learning. Thank you.
All right. Well, great to talk to you, Larry. Thanks a lot, and thanks for what you do.
Oh, but it's my pleasure, sir. You'll come back on again, and good luck this year. Thanks, Matt. And Matt's going. Okay, Matt Bloomsfeld, Dr. Matt, is the Commissioner of Education in Nebraska, President of Board of Directors for CCSSO. They got the right guy for this job. And that board he's working with, I don't know them all, but the ones I know are absolutely excellent. Okay, so it's going to be a good year. You'll see. 2021 is going to be a good year. I think they sang that in Tommy, the old rock opera. All right, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Join with us for equity, ace-ed.org, and enjoy our magazine, Equity and Access, right over there. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.